for your very kind words. In the Chumash we read that on Yamim Tovim we are forbidden to do Malacha just as on Shabbos. All of the laws of Malacha, the Malachas Deraisim, Malachas Derabbanan, all of the Xeris, everything that Halacha says about Shabbos applies to Yom Tov as well, with one slight difference, that on Yom Tov there is a Hefer Echal Nefesh. So already in the days of the Tanoim they saw that the people had misunderstood this, and they thought that on Yom Tov everything goes. You can cook, you can bake, you can carry, you can do whatever you want. And at the Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Daf of that Masechta which deals with the laws of Yom Tov, the Gemara tells us that the laws of Muktzeh are more strict on Yom Tov than they are on Shabbos. There's a dispute in Shulchan Aruch exactly to what extent they are more strict. The Sfardim are very machmer, the Ashkenazim are machmer only a little bit, but it's clear from the Shulchan Aruch, both according to the sheet of the Mechaber and the sheet of the Ramah, both the Ashkenazim and the Sfardim, everybody's machmer, everybody agrees that the laws of Muktzeh are stricter on Yom Tov than they are on Shabbos, exactly because of this consideration, because the people already in the days of the Tanaim, certainly today, already in the days of Tanaim, they noticed that the people were mezalzel very much in Malach on Yom Tov. They thought they can do everything. This is not exactly so. It's not so at all. I remember when I was a little boy, the practice was that the mothers were so conscientious, or over conscientious, they used to be makpid in the doctor to squeeze out fresh oranges every day to make orange juice for the children. And I have 9 children. I don't remember ever squeezing out oranges. You buy orange juice, but maybe years ago they didn't sell oranges. I don't remember what it was, but somehow I remember they always used to squeeze out oranges. Everybody knows Shabbos, you're not allowed to squeeze out oranges. What about Yom Tov or squeeze out lemons? People enjoy lemon juice in their tea on Shabbos. People know, even though it's a question, people know you're not supposed to squeeze out the lemons on Shabbos. What about Yom Tov? So everybody says, well, Yom Tov, Eichel Nefesh. So those who studied Gemara Beitza will remember on the first daf, on the very first page in the Masechta that deals with the laws of Yom Tov, the Gemara makes it clear that you're not permitted to squeeze out fruit juices on Yom Tov. But this aspect of Shabbos applies equally to Yom Tov, and there is no Hefer Eichel Nefesh. Aye, but it says in the Chumash that you're permitted to do malachas for the sake of Eichel Nefesh. So how can it say in the Gemara that it's forbidden? The Tesis says that kasha. The Tesis gives an answer, whatever the long complicated answer is. But it says explicitly in the Gemara that one is forbidden to squeeze out juice on Yom Tov. The Mishnah says explicitly one is forbidden to go fishing on Yom Tov. The fellow wants to eat some fresh fish, why can't he go fishing? Well, that's explicit in the Mishnah. One is forbidden to fish on Yom Tov. One is forbidden to pluck off fruits on Yom Tov. What if you walk into your backyard and you have pear trees, you have apple trees, you want to pluck off some fresh fruits on Yom Tov? On Shabbos, mail, we understand it's a malacha and there's no hetzer. Yom Tov, you're permitted to do malachas for the sake of Eichel Nefesh. So the Mishnah makes it clear that it's forbidden to be kotzer, to harvest peiros that are attached to the ground on Yom Tov. The same as Shabbos applies to Yom Tov. The heter Eichel Nefesh, that one is permitted to do malachas on Yom Tov for the sake of preparing food, is a pretty restricted heter. It doesn't apply across the board. In the days of the Talmud, it was permissible to shech behemoth on Yom Tov because, in the days of the Talmud, and until very, very recently, that everybody has refrigerators and freezers, in the days of the Talmud, the practice was that if a person wanted to eat flesh or chicken, they would shech the behemoth that day, and they would eat it. There would be no way to refrigerate, there would be no way to maintain the freshness of the meat. If you're going to shech that on Erev Yom Tov, so by the time it's going to come to cook it and to eat it on Yom Tov, it'll get spoiled. The Gemara has the expression, chashino lemichmar bisro. They are afraid that the meat will get spoiled. But bizman hazeh, but today that we have refrigerators, so nobody all year long, anyone who's interested in eating meat, we don't go to the butcher, we don't go to the sheikhet when we're interested. We eat meat almost every day. It's not like in the days of the Gemara. Years ago, they ate once in a long while, Shabbos. They were lucky. Today, people eat meat every day. So when we're interested in eating meat, we go to the sheikhet, they should shech the chicken on that day. We go to shech the behemah, not that, of course not. It's geshachten a long time before. Especially airline meal. From last Pesach. It was delicious, but it was in the freezer for a long, long time. So today it would be forbidden to shech on Yom Tov. You're only permitted, the Ramban, in his commentary on the Gemara, as well as his commentary on the Chumash, points out, one is only permitted to do such malachas on Yom Tov the tzarach ha'achal nefesh, which are normally done soon before eating the meal. What a normal person would do in the weekdays. What do you do, let's say, the balabos, the cook supper? She cooks the meal on that day and she serves it for supper. She doesn't cook it a week in advance. She doesn't cook it a few days in advance. So whatever is normally done immediately prior to eating the meal, that's what you're permitted to do on Yom Tov for the sake of Eichel Nefesh. So in the days of the Talmud, one used to shecht on the same day and eat it, so then shechita was permissible. But the Zman Hazeh, you're not permitted to shecht. And the same thing, let's say, harvesting things from the ground. Normally, people who are interested in eating fruits don't go out in the backyard and pluck them the same day. They have something in the kitchen, and then when they're interested in eating, so they take from the kitchen. They don't go pluck from the tree, or they don't grind the grain and make it into flour when they're about to bake bread or cake or cookies. The flour is made well in advance, so whatever malachas are normally done way before preparation of the meal may not be done on Yom Tov. So it's because of this problem that the Tanoim already saw, that the Hamoin Am, the vast majority of the Balabatim, didn't understand the nature of the Heter Eichel Nefesh. The people thought that on Yom Tov everything goes, so that's why they had to introduce certain chumras, certain restrictions in Yom Tov, and they made the laws, they instituted the laws of Muktzeh in a more Chomedic fashion than with respect to Shabbos. It's interesting, Rashi's opinion is, and this is the way there are more Paschim of the Shulchan Aruch, this is Ashkenazim accept this, that even regarding cooking the meals, there are some people who are such mefunokim, they're so sensitive, they can tell the difference between a meal that was just freshly cooked, especially when you go to a hotel. These people can tell the difference between a meal that was just cooked today as opposed to a meal that was cooked a few days ago and was taken out of the freezer and was reheated. They can spot it right away, they can tell it, and they enjoy bedafke eating such a meal that was just freshly cooked. So as far as those people are concerned, those balabastas are permitted to cook on Yom Tov because their families, they or their husbands or their children, their families enjoy bedafke eating freshly cooked food. Many people in this generation are not so makbid about that. Many people don't have time to sit and enjoy the meal so much. They're always on the run. So they always eat meals that were cooked in advance, pre-cooked, and they're just reheated. So the people enjoy the meal just as much. If it's not cooked immediately before eating it, then it says in the Shulchan Aruch that we pass like Rashi, that we're not even permitted to cook food. That's mamish eichel nefesh, ein lecha eichel nefesh, God means that to cook the food on Yom Tov. Even to cook the food would be forbidden. If you could have just as well cooked the food on Erev Yom Tov and left it in the freezer and reheated it, and it would taste the same as far as you're concerned, it'll taste the same. Then it says in Shulchan Aruch, you have to do that. You have to prepare everything for before Yom Tov and put it in the refrigerator or the freezer and just reheat it on Yom Tov. And even the heter that we all know, that not only is it permissible to cook food on Yom Tov, that's actually called Eichel Nefesh, that's the pasuk in the Chumash, cooking food, but even doing a melach on Yom Tov, Mitzorach HaYom Tzas, let's say people take a talis to shul, those who are blessed with an Erev, so there's no problem, you carry on Shabbos as well. But let's say in those communities, not everybody has an Erev. So in those communities where there is no Erev, so you're not permitted to carry on Shabbos, what about on Yom Tov? So everybody thinks, oh, Yom Tov, you can carry everything you want. It's not exactly so. The Mishnah, the Gemara discusses, the Talmud, the Rishonim discusses carrying keys to open up the cabinet that has the food. If you have a lock on your freezer, a lock on your refrigerator, and the key is in a different building, so you're permitted to carry the key in order to get the Eichel Nefesh. What about to lock your apartment when you go to shul? So that's a question. What are we afraid of if we don't lock our apartment? We're afraid Ganavim will come and steal what? They're going to steal the food. The Ganavim are not going to steal the food. They'll find something more interesting to steal. So what they're going to walk off with is not really going to be something that we're going to use on Yom. They're going to steal, okay? The silver, whatever they're going to. I haven't gotten it in a long time. So I don't know what they're interested in, but they're certainly not going to steal the cholent, but they're certainly not going to steal the food that's prepared for Yom. So on the Shulchan Aruch, it's not so poshut. It's generally assumed that one is permitted to carry keys to the apartment on Yom Tov. But until you get to the Shulchan Aruch, it's a long, drawn-out discussion, and the Chafetz Chaim in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah points out that not everybody agrees to that hetzer. Some insist that whatever etzer you give on Shabbos, you should do on Yom Tov as well. If you have a Shabbos belt, or you have a Shabbos pin, or whatever, or you leave your keys in the apartment somewhere, in your home, so you should do the same on Yom Tov, because the heter to carry keys on Yom Tov is not such a heter pashut. The Mishnah says that we follow the opinion of Bezalel, And not only is one permitted to carry food on Yom Tov, one is permitted to carry the lulav to shul, one is permitted to carry the baby in order to take a walk, in order to get fresh air, one is permitted to carry a sefer Torah, if they need the sefer Torah in shul to lane. But some to carry unnecessarily is certainly prohibited. Not only do you have to empty out your pockets on Yom Tov to make sure that you don't have any mukta there, you have to empty out all of the stam junk, all of the things that are stam in your pocket, just like on Shabbos, one is not permitted to carry, if there's no Erev, that is. One is not permitted to carry on Yom Tov. Also, one is forbidden to carry, unless you have a tzorech achal nefesh, unless you're carrying, let's say, the food to the sukkah, or you're carrying, you're going to eat your matzahs, you're going to have a seder and someone else's home, you're going to bring your own shmur matzah, whatever. If you're carrying food, or you're carrying the key to the cabinet that has the food, or to carry something that's absolutely necessary and essential. But some to carry shalom tzorech is forbidden on Yom Tov, just like it's forbidden on Shabbos. In fact, there is an opinion. The Ravid's opinion is, or the Ravid in his commentary on Gemara Ksubis in the first Perek, that this heter to carry, let's say, a machzir and a talis, is not as good as the heter to cook food. That even though, strictly speaking, one may cook food on Yom Tov, even if he could have just as well cooked it on Erev Yom Tov, and even they were machzir. But strictly speaking, min HaTorah, biblically, one should have been permitted to cook food on Yom Tov, even though it's Efshalas and Sivod Yom. But in the area of Tzarech HaYom Tzas, to carry a machzor or a talis, if you have no area, but one could have just as well left his machzor or a talis and shul, that is prohibited min HaTorah. It's forbidden biblically to carry, if there's no area, that it is to carry on Yom Tov something that he could have taken care of on Erev Yom Tov. But whether the Ravid is right or wrong, the Rabbanim would certainly hold like that. We hold even the Gabi cooking. Whatever cooking one could have done on Erev Yom Tov would have tasted just as good. So you're not permitted to do that on Yom Tov. You have to prepare everything with Bar Yom Tov. So this certainly applies with respect to carrying the Machzor and the Talis. Everything should be taken to Shul and Bar Yom before Yom Tov begins. Whatever, unless you have an Erev again, and there's no problem of, there's no reason to offer of Hitzur. Many people forget that one is forbidden to do any act of Hachon on the first day Yom Tov. For the second day Yom Tov, of course this year the first day Yom Tov is Shabbos, second day Yom Tov is Yom Tov, so everybody will know you have permitted to do Hachone from Shabbos to Yom Tov. But even if Yom Tov would fall out in the middle of the week, on Wednesday and Thursday, whatever, the din still is in the Gemara that Yom Tov Rishon is a Yom Tov Min HaTorah. You know, in Eretz Yisrael they only observe the first day Yom Tov, that's the only Yom Tov Min HaTorah. Yom Tov Sheni is only a Yom Tov for the Rabbanah. And even regarding the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, that even in Eretz Yisrael they observe 2 days, but still the second day of Rosh Hashanah is only with the Rabbanah. But the Gemara makes it very clear that it's prohibited to do any preparation, whether an act of malacha or not. Not only to cook food on the first day Yom Tov to the second day Yom Tov. Cooking food is a malacha. Even just, let's say, the following. Many people prepare all of their food in Bod Yom. On Erev Yom Tov, they cook everything and they leave everything in the freezer. And then if the husband is going to come home the second night of Yom Tov and all the food is going to be taken out of the freezer, it'll take hours till it defrosts, till it'll be in the position that you'll be able to reheat it. To warm it up for Leil Yom Tov. So even for the balabasta to take out the food from the freezer on the first day Yom Tov for the second day Yom Tov, where there's no malacha involved at all, that's not a malacha, that's just purely an act of hachana, that too is prohibited. One is not permitted to set the table on the first day for the second day. Even though setting the table is not a malacha, but one is forbidden to do any act of hachana on the first day for the second day. So what one should really do is, all of the food for those who don't necessarily enjoy freshly cooked food. For those who insist that they only enjoy the food that was just cooked today, and they don't enjoy as much the food that was cooked yesterday, so they're permitted to cook food on Yom Tov also. But most people, I think, don't really care whether the food is reheated or the food was cooked today, because we're so used to eating reheated food all over the place. So it doesn't make such a big difference as far as we're concerned. So as far as most people are concerned, all of the food should really be cooked before Yom Tov. Everything should be placed in the freezer, the refrigerator, whatever. And the food that the Balabasta plans to use to reheat for the second night of Yom Tov should be removed from the freezer before Yom Tov begins, so that they won't have to take it out on the first day for the second day. This is a big problem. People don't pay attention. That too is an act of hachana. To take the food out from the freezer on the first day for the second day constitutes a problem. Regarding Hadlokas HaNeiros, many of the women make a mistake. Everybody knows that on Shabbos you have to bench lift before Shabbos begins. But everybody thinks, oh, that's because on Shabbos lighting candles is a malacha. But on Yom Tov, when you're permitted to light candles, you're not permitted to turn on a flame. You're not permitted to be madlak eish mechadosh. But to light a candle from an already existing flame, let's say if you have the fire out in the kitchen, so to light a candle from that flame, we know that that's permissible. Rav Yontov, one is permitted to light candles, so many women assume they'll ben shlich when the husband comes home from shul. When he comes home from Meir, so they'll ben shlich at that time. The poskim say that this is not really proper, that just like on Erev Shabbos, the proper thing is to be moisif mechoil al hakodesh, to be mekabel Shabbos early. And the women normally are mekabel Shabbos early, they accept upon themselves the kedushas haShabbos when they ben shlich, and they recite the bracha lahad l'gneshal Shabbos. So the same is true regarding Yontov. There is a mitzvah lahostif mechol ala kodesh. Some say it's a biblical mitzvah, some say it's a rabbinical mitzvah, whatever. Whether it's a mitzvah min haTorah like kashrus, or a mitzvah in the rabbanon like mikra megillah, we fulfill. The Orthodox people enjoy observing all of the mitzvahs, whether they're mitzvahs min haTorah or mitzvahs min the rabbanon. We enjoy doing all of the mitzvahs that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us, and that he encouraged the chachamim to give us. So there is a mitzvah to be moisif mechol ala kodesh, and for that reason, the women should ben shlich early on Erev Yontov as well. That's one reason why they should really be mekabel Yontov early. And just parenthetically, the practice in most communities is, it's in America, the practice has developed that the women ben shlich 18 minutes before Shabbos. 18 minutes before Shabbos is not really based on Tosefta Shabbos, it's based on the following. There is one opinion that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, that at sunset, this is already considered Seis HaKachavim, what we call Shabbos Vaday. And 18 minutes before sunset begins the Zman HaBein HaShmashim. This is an obscure sheet of the Magen Avraham, quotes an opinion of the Urayim, Lezen Mitz, who says like this, that the last 18 minutes of the day before the sun sets is what the Talmud calls Bein HaShmashim, that we treat as a Suffolk Yom Suffolk Laila. So one is forbidden, everyone would be prohibited to do Malacha during those 18 minutes. So that's why the Minhag HaOlam developed in many communities that the women ben shlich, they finish benching lich before 18 minutes before sunset. But that's not really Tosefta Shabbos. If you want to be moistic from Chol HaKodesh, if you want to observe the mitzvah of Tosefta Shabbos, you have to be Mekabel Shabbos before Bein HaShmashos. Bein HaShmashos is the time period that you have to abstain from Malacha. So you really should accept Shabbos earlier than 18 minutes. The poskim speak about a Chatzi Shor. Some Rishonim even say that it's a mitzvah and Atara, it's a biblical mitzvah, for the men and the women and the children, everybody to accept Shabbos 30 minutes before sunset, if possible. It's not so difficult. Whenever Shabbos is, you just arrange your clock in such a way that you can come Shabbos half an hour before. So the same should really be done regarding Yontov as well. The women should really ben shlich half an hour before sunset on Erev Yontov, just like on Erev Shabbos. Of course, when you have 2 days Yontov, when you have, let's say, now we have the first day Yontov is Shabbos. Obviously, no one is going to bench this on Shabbos for the second day. That's prohibited. But even if Yontov would fall out in the middle of the week, let's say Yontov falls out some on a Tuesday and a Wednesday. So the Gemara says one is prohibited to bench this on the first day for the second day because you're not permitted to do any malachas on the first day for the second day. So then you have no braver. When you have 2 days Yontov, then you have to light candles for the second night after Tzeis HaKachavim in the middle of the night. Unless, it says in Shulchan Aruch, unless one is sitting in a dark room at home and the lights are not on and the people want to have illumination today, and if they want to light candles on the first day for the first day, that they should see what's going on in the house. So then they're permitted to light candles from an already existing flame. So once they light the candles, there's no avera to say the bracha sheker b'shanu b'mitzvosu b'tzivanu lahadlech ner shel yontif, to make it clear that the candles that they're lighting are not only for now, for the first day, are going to serve the purpose of lighting into the second night as well. That's not a nisar achrona. They ain't kol v'kol. Anyway, they're lighting the candles because it's dark in the house. So they can already say the bracha. They can add on the bracha, l'hamik nashol yontem. But generally, before every yontem, the proper thing is that the women should ben shlich before the first day yontem. The proper thing certainly is that the women should ben shlich in advance, just like on Erev Shabbos. However many minutes they're magdim, however early they bench lift before Shabbos, whether 30 minutes or 40 minutes in Yerushalayim, they bench lift way before, or 18 minutes, whatever they do on a normal Shabbos, they should do on a normal Erev Yom. They should bench lift early. They shouldn't wait till the husband comes home. There is a big problem when people go to hotels. I don't know how many people here go to hotels. Regarding Hadlokas Neiris Shabbos and Hadlokas Neiris Yontov, usually what they do in all of the Orthodox places is they have one little room that nobody uses at all, and then they have several hundred candles there. All of the guests come to bench lift and nobody uses those candles at all. It's a separate room, Pashtek, So you don't eat there, you don't sleep there, you don't read the newspaper there. No one uses that room at all. So this is highly questionable whether one fulfills any mitzvah at all in lighting the candles. Not only whether one fulfills a mitzvah, may one may even be violating an avera of reciting a bracha levat olah by reciting a blessing over the candles, which are not going to be used at all. So to light candles on the table we're going to eat, I imagine the hotel management won't be interested in that. They don't want people light candles. Light candles in your bedroom is an erga. You're gonna burn down the whole hotel. It's not shy. You're gonna leave candles in your hotel room. So the pashtus is that in such a situation, the balabasta should have to, the man or the woman, whoever, should light candles on the electric bulb. If you have fluorescent bulbs, so that's probably not good prevention for. But if you have electric bulbs that have a filament, so that's a question. So in Europe, many Gedolim said, I think the majority of the opinion of the Gedolim in Europe was that one may recite a bracha if one is in the hospital or a shas avchak. In America, the shas avchak is that we go away to a hotel for Yom Kippur Shabbos. In Europe, the shas avchak was never. If they were sick, they had a baby, they were in the hospital. The shas avchak in America is that they go for a Yom Kippur for Shabbos. So if you have such a shas avchak, you have no choice. You have to say the bracha over the electric bulb. This is good when you're away for Shabbos, you're away for the first day Yom. What do you do for the second day Yom? It's generally assumed that it's not permitted to turn on electric lights on Yom. Even though the Gemara says that one is permitted to light a flame from an already existing flame. And years ago, when electricity was just introduced in Europe, there was a minority opinion, there was some prominent rabbanim who were of the opinion that it's permissible to turn on electric bulbs on Yom Tov, because this is like lighting a flame from an already existing flame, because the current is running anyway. But over the years, this opinion was rejected, especially by Rav Chaim Eiser and most of the Gedolim in Europe. And even those who originally years ago used to be mativists, most of them backed out, and now it's generally accepted that it's prohibited, that one is not permitted to turn on the electric lights on Yom Tov. So what does one do if you have this nevach b'shas avchak? The couple went away to the hotel for Pesach. The Erev, the first day Yom Tov, so the balabasta can say the bracha on the electric lights in the bedroom that they're going to use, that will illuminate the room that they plan to use. What are they going to do on the second night of Yom Tov? You can't turn on any lights. So there's nothing to bench lift about, so she shouldn't bench lift. So the woman is going to be heartbroken. So the woman has an option. Either you don't go to the hotel. You go to the hotel, you lose Hadlokas Neiris on the second night. One or the other, they have to make up their mind. Even when the people are home, let's say those who don't go away to the hotels, and they stay home, where exactly does the balabasta bench lift the second night of Yom Tov in Europe? They never had a situation where the lights were burning to say that. They didn't have lights, electric lights that were burning from before Yom Tov through Yom Tov. They didn't have a Shabbat clock, and the lights were on. When it's time to bench lift the second night of Yom Tov, when the husband comes home from shul, says the chacham, so the lights are on already by us. In Europe, when the husband will come home, it will be dark in the house. So of course, the balabasta lights the candle, shirabach, lahalik neshal Yom Tov. But by us, the lights are on. So it says in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah quotes in Hilchos Shabbos, in the name of the Tesis in Perek Bamim Adlikin, the first daf in Bamim Adlikin, that you can only recite a blessing over Hadlokas Neiris for Shabbos and for Yom Tov if the room is dark. And by lighting the candles, you are illuminating the room. Or we task, and even if, let's say, two families are eating in the same room, and one balabasta lights on one end of the table, look, so should I just two candles? How many little candles? She has nine children. She lights 11 candles. Okay, I have nine children. Light 11 candles next. So how lit up is the room? And then you have a long table. If you have nine children, it's going to be pretty crowded. Then you have another family eating at the other end of the table. So the balabasta over there can light a light there. She can bench lift on her candles because it says in the Shulchan Aruch, there is at least Tosefis Ora V'Simcha. You are adding illumination at that end of the room. But by us, we have the electric lights on top. You have a chandelier, whatever, on top of the room that floods the entire room with light. So any candles that you're going to light on the table are not really adding romantic atmosphere. It looks more Shabbos day, Yom Tov day. But it doesn't really add any illumination, very little illumination. So it's highly questionable whether one can recite a bracha when you light candles, when the lights are on already. In fact, the contemporary poskim will say, so Rebbeitzchik used to say this all the time, he wrote, but other rabbanim have this in their svarim. When the balabasta benches licht on Erev Shabbos, she should be careful to turn off the lights first, then turn on all the electric lights, and then say the bracha. If the lights are on for the last half hour, then she can't say a bracha, no, hadith neshal Shabbos. She has to turn out the lights. Turn on the lights again, and then light candles also. And the bracha that she'll recite, L'chag Ibn Yashal Shabbos, L'chag Ibn Yashal Yontif, on Erev Yontif, refers back to all of the electric lights and the candles that she just lit. But on the second night, Yontif, she can't turn off any lights. The lights are flooding the room with light. So what does she have to say, Abracha, L'chag Ibn Yashal Yontif? There's absolutely no Tosefis Oira. There's Tosefis Simcha, maybe, it adds an atmosphere, but there's no Tosefis Oira. So the Yoylam, on every second night Yom Tov, you have this problem, even if you stay home, where is the Balabas to bench lift? So she should really bench lift in a different room. Even though we usually are mahadir, we are always medaktik, there is a dispute whether the Balabas can recite the Baruch of Lahadik Neshal Shabbos or Lahadik Neshal Yom Tov, if she benches lift, not in the Cheder HaAchila, not the Mokum HaAchila, because candles are going to be lit not in the place where they're going to eat. So that's a dispute, and we pass in the Shulchan Aruch that yes, that even if the woman is lighting candles in a different room, you can still recite the bracha, but l'chatchila you should light with the bracha in the room where they plan to eat. But if you have 2 days yontif, the chutzpah is, we always have 2 days yontif, and the second night yontif, the lights are burning already, the electric lights are on the whole time, so you can't say a bracha over lighting candles in a room that's flooded with light from the chandelier on top. You have to go light in another room, where it's not so lit up, but there's a little light in one end, or there's no light at all, and then you light candles in another end of that room, and you use the candles there. Otherwise it's impossible to say a bracha. And not only impossible to say a bracha, otherwise what are you lighting candles about? It's a malacha. You're not permitted to light candles on the altar unless you really need it. But if you're not adding any light to the room, it's not permissible to light the candles at all. Although the Gemara says, although it's forbidden to prepare on the first day Yom Tov for the second day Yom Tov, or it's forbidden to cook, it's certainly forbidden to do any malachas, to light candles on the first day for the second day, when the first day is Yom Tov and the second day is Shabbos, like the last days of Pesach, Shvi'i Shel Pesach, so the first day is Yom Tov, the second day is Shabbos, so then the Gemara says, min ha-Torah biblically, you're permitted to do all the hachanas you want, you're permitted to do all the malachas, you're permitted to cook, and so on the first day, for Shabbos. But with the Rabbanan, the Chachamim made a takana that it's only permissible to do all the malachas on Yom Tov for Shabbos if you put aside an Erev Tavshilin. What exactly is an Erev Tavshilin? So people remember from Europe somehow that you put away a hard-boiled egg and a matzah. It's not so pashut, this hard-boiled egg and a matzah. When you study the Gemara in Beitzo, when the Gemara has a discussion of an Erev Tavshilin, it would appear that lechatchila, this is a mitzvah of the Rabbanan, to make an Erev Tavshilin. So lechatchila, the proper way to have an Erev Tavshilin is if this food was cooked or baked specifically for the purpose of being used for an Erev Tavshilin, or at least specifically for the purpose of being used for Shabbat. The Chofetz Chaim in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch is not sure, the Mishnah Berurah is not sure exactly what the lechatchila is. You buy a box of matzahs, that matzah wasn't baked specifically to be eaten this last day paper. Matzahs were baked to be eaten whenever. You can eat it all year long also. So to make an Erev Tavshil and a Chatchila, the proper thing is to use such a Tavshil and a Paz if you plan to cook and to bake cake or cookies or whatever. So then on Yom Tov for Shabbos, then you need both a Tavshil, some flesh or some fish or some egg or something that's cooked, and you need a pas and a matzah or a challah or something like that. On Pesach, of course, can have a challah, but you need something that's baked. Most people don't bake on Yom Tov Shabbos. No, most people, they cook fish, flesh, soup, all kinds of things, but they don't bake challah. They don't bake matzahs on Yom Tov. So whenever you're not baking bread, cake, or cooking, then there's no need to put away the Erev Tavshilin in the pas. The only time you need both the hard-boiled egg and the matzah is if you plan both to bake cake, cookies, and bread or something, and you plan to cook. If you only plan to cook, then all you need is the tavshil. All you need is the hard-boiled egg. So again, this hard-boiled egg and this matzah, l'chatchila, these things should really be cooked and baked specifically for the purpose of serving as an Erev Tavshilin, or at least specifically for the purpose of serving for Shabbos. They should be eaten on Shabbos. The Bi'eved, it says in the Gemara, even if you bought a box of matzah stand that was baked by the company to be eaten whenever the customers want to eat it, the Bi'eved, you can use such a matzah. The Bi'eved, if you just happen to have a dozen hard-boiled eggs around the house, the Balabasa cooks a dozen eggs before Yom Tov, and she plans to use them whatever, So the husband takes one of the hard-boiled eggs and he marks down, this is the Erev Tavshilin egg, and he said to the son, now that egg wasn't cooked specifically for the sake of Erev Tavshilin. Wasn't it cooked for the purpose of being eaten on Shabbos? So the Hakhiri shouldn't use that for an Erev Tavshilin b'Yevet. If you used it for the Yevet, it would be good. But why should we only fulfill a mitzvah for the Yevet? Erev Tavshilin is a HaMitzvah, not Tama Heter. Not Tama Heter. If you made the Erev Tavshilin, then you can cook. But HaMitzvah, you say, Brocha, I'm making an Erev Tavshilin. So this institution of Erev Tavshilin is that the L'chatchila, the pas and the tavshil should be prepared in advance specifically for Shabbos and if possible specifically for the purpose of serving as an Erev Tavshilin. And furthermore, the Gemara says that the tavshil, the meichel that you use, the cooked, what we use, the cooked egg, that's a question whether a cooked egg is good. The Gemara says you have to use something that's conspicuous and noticeable and clear and obvious that it's L'Kovet Shabbos. So the Chayei Yodim already points out, the Chayei Yodim lived 200 years ago, so he points out that hard-boiled eggs, today there are people who eat hard-boiled eggs every day of the week. Thousands of years ago it was expensive, so they couldn't afford to have eggs all the time. The wealthy people had eggs all the time. But today, people eat eggs every day of the week, so where is it noticeable that you're going to have hard-boiled eggs for Shabbos? That's a Shabbos is a Michael, it's Nikar, it's noticeable. What can you possibly put aside in the Kovet Shabbos that Shabbos is? What are you going to put away? Chicken? We eat chicken all week long. The wealthy people, we eat chicken every day. Flesh? It's flesh in the middle of the week also. What do you put aside? You fill the fish? Oh, you fill the fish, that's a Shabbos is a Michael. You fill the fish is Meyuchad, a special Shabbos is a Michael, without the bones, in order that we shouldn't have a Shaila Borer. That's exactly why the Jews came upon this idea, removing the bones in advance, that we shouldn't get involved in a Malacha Borer. So you fill the fish, a chopped liver, that's a special Meichel that's Miuchat for Shabbos. So if a person, Chayyadim says, if a person is used to eating all the foods during the middle of the week that he eats on Shabbos, and Lachatchili is supposed to use for an effort, Bidiyeved, the Gemara says, if he used hard-boiled egg avad, it's good. But L'chatchila, the Chayyadim says, based on the passage in the Gemara, you should really set aside such a tafshil, such a food, to serve as the Erev Tavshilin that was cooked specifically for Shabbos, for the Erev Tavshilin, which is unique to Shabbos, like a gefilte fish, or a chopped liver, or chopped liver salad, and so on, something that's noticeable that is special for Shabbos. Of course, for those who are going away to the hotel, so they're not going to cook, they're not going to bake, they're not going to do anything. So they don't need any Erev Tavshilin. The only question is, but you're going to Ben Shlich. The Balabasta may or may not decide to Ben Shlich depending on what you're going to do. I don't know what you're going to do. On the first day for the second day, what you're going to do with Ben Shlich? Probably no place that she can Ben Shlich on the first day for the second day. Where is she going to Ben Shlich? So if a person makes an Erev Tavshilin only for the sake of Ben Shlich, that's a question. In the Shulchan Aruch, that's a Shaila. So what if a person forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin? So they're not allowed to cook any food on Yom Tov Shabbos. Are they forbidden to Ben Shlich also on Yom Tov Shabbos? So that's the dispute in the Shulchan Aruch, that's the question. So therefore the Mishnah Berurah says, if the people have everything is all cooked in advance, they plan to cook absolutely nothing on the first day for the second day. They're not going to prepare, they're not going to cook any food on Yom Tov Shabbos. So what do they need an Erev Tavshilin for? They're going to say, Bracha Olah Tovah. They know in advance that they're not going to do anything. They don't have a Havamin of doing anything. So if they plan to light candles on Yom Tov for Shabbos, so that's a dispute whether you need an Erev Tavshilin for that or not. So then, in such a situation, you should make an Erev Tavshilin without a bracha. But for the people who go to the hotel properly, like you say, after tonight, they're not going to bench lift. Either they're not going to stay home, or they're not going to bench lift on the first day or the second day. There's no way to bench lift, so they don't need any Erev Tavshilin at all. So that's why the Balabas, who owns the hotel, he has to make the Erev Tavshilin. He's going to do all the halachas. He's going to do all the cooking and the preparation for Yom Tov Shabbos. But the guests who come don't need any Erev Tavshilin. The halacha says that you don't require each and every individual person to make an Erev Tavshilin. The Erev Tavshilin has to be made by the family, per family. What if you have two families, one of the eight of us, one Erev Tavshilin? So then the Gemara says that the one family should prepare the food, the tavshil with the pas, and they should give it to a member of the other family to pick up to be kind of a shutzit. You require a kinyan. So this is why in the Shulchan Aruch they write the following, based on a passage in the Gemara, that it's the responsibility of the rabbis in every community to make life easy for the Balabas. Some people view the rabbis that it's their job to make life difficult The rabbis have to make kumris and isurim. No, the Gemara says that's not what it is. The Gemara says that in a chumash it sounds like you give 40 times malchus. And the rabbis came and they said, no, that's not the pshat. They made life easier. They said only 39 for the Rishoyim. For the Rishoyim are getting malchus. The rabbi said, you read the pasuk wrong. You get the mitzvah rabban. You only get 39 times malchus. You don't get 40. So the Gemara says the definition of a Talmud Chacham, of a Gavra Rabbe, is the person who makes life easy for his parishioners, for his followers. So the Gemara says it's the responsibility of the Rabbanim and every community, whatever possible, to make an Erev to allow carry. Some communities you can't make an Erev. But whenever it's possible to make an Erev, it's the obligation of the rabbi to see to it that the life should be easier. That's the Gemara Erevin. And the Gemara says in Beitzah, it's the responsibility of the rabbi in every community to make an Erev Tavshila on behalf of those Balabatim who will forget. Not everybody will remember to make an Erev Tavshila. Some people don't know how to make an Erev Tavshila. It's not so difficult. You take your kids to Shulchan Aruch and you read. It's in 10 lines, not so hard. But for those, and you read your rock scroll, you get the rock scroll master, and Avada has a rock scroll Haggadah. And in one easy lesson, you figure out how to make an Erev Tavshila. But for those who may forget, or for those who will not be able to become educated enough, that the obligation and the responsibility of the rabbi in every community to make an Erev Tavshilin on behalf of those Balabatim. So the Gemara says, when the rabbi makes for his own family, there's no problem. The rabbi's family, the guests, whatever, that's all counted as one big happy family. So it doesn't have to be Machner Shushkus on the bottom. He just puts aside the pas and the Tavshil. And that's the Erev Tavshil. When the rabbi wants to make the Erev Tavshil on behalf of all those families and make the guests, then he has to give his chopped liver, or his gefilte fish, or his hard-boiled egg, or whatever, his matzah, whatever he's going to use, he has to give it to someone other than a member of his family to pick up a tefach, and to be koneh shutfus on behalf of all of those who will forget. And then when the rabbi recites the text, he says the brach, and he says the nusach that appears in the machzor, for the Erev Tavshilin, he says, this Erev Tavshilin should serve lonu, for my family, and for all the Jewish people who live in this community, it means all those are going to forget. But when a private person makes his Erev Tavshilin, he's not supposed to say that last line. This Erev Tavshilin is good for all the Jews who live in this community. It's not true. It's only good for you and your family. Your Erev Tavshilin, the private Erev Tavshilin, is not good for anybody else, unless he made a shutfus, unless he gave it to someone to pick up to the kind of shutfus on behalf of the others. The rabbi is supposed to say that last line. In most machzorim, there's a mistake. They should have that. There should be in parentheses.
It's not in parentheses.
In the next edition, we're going to have to correct it. It should be in parentheses that only applies when one is making an Erev Tavshilin on behalf of all of the people in his community. That's only for the Rabbanim. But the private people who make an Erev Tavshilin shouldn't say that last one. Mentioned earlier the issue of hadlokas neiros, whether one is permitted to fulfill, whether one can fulfill the mitzvah of benching lift over an electric bulb. So in Europe, most of the poskim were of the opinion that yes. The first one who wrote the famous tshuva was the Beit Yitzchak, Beit Yitzchak Shmelkish, and the later poskim quote in his name, but they're all masking with him. They say for Chanukah not. They don't think, most of the posts in New York felt that you couldn't fulfill the mitzvah of Hadlokas Neiros Chanukah over an electric menorah, but for Shabbos and Yom Tov, yes. The same question, a similar related question came up regarding Havdalah. When you recite Havdalah on the Tzoyi Shabbos and you say, Baruch Mi'ori Ha'eish, can you use an electric bulb? It comes up sometimes in shul where it's uncomfortable to go get a, where are you going to get a candle? And the Chazan is reciting Havdalah in shul, is it acceptable to recite the bracha of Baruch Mi'ori Ha'eish on an electric bulb? Sometimes it comes up in the home also. If the Balabas is going to bench lift on the second night, Yom Tov, let's say this Pesach, so the first day Pesach is Shabbos, second day Pesach is Sunday. So if the lights are all on in the room where they're going to eat, so she's not going to light candles there, she's going to light candles in a different room, and the husband is going to say Kiddush over here, he's going to have the second Seder in the room where the electric bulbs are on, so how's he going to say Bar Mi'arei? So you have to go take the candles from the other room, there's a whole geshefte. So the question is, are they permitted to recite the bracha Baruch Mi'ori Ha'eish on the electric light? So in Europe, this was also a shaila. So many rabbanim were of the opinion that if you can see the filament, Today, most of the electric bulbs are frosted, so you can't see the filament inside. Just see that the whole bulb is lit up. But if you have a non-frosted bulb, which is a clear bulb, and you can see the filament glowing inside, so many of the Rabbanim, I think most of the Rabbanim in Europe, are of the opinion that this is acceptable, that this is considered Eish Mamish, and can recite the bracha not only on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yom Kippur, can recite Lahadik there. It's considered an Erev Lahadik National Shabbos, even on Matzoi Shabbos, and you have to say Borei Yorei HaEish. This constitutes Eish. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik Rishi told us that he remembers he was once in Vilna on a Shabbos, and Rav Chaim, he noticed where Rav Chaim Moshe was medaktik. He went out of his way bedaktik to recite Borei Yorei HaEish on the electric bulbs to demonstrate that his opinion was the turning on electric lights on Shabbos constitutes a malacha deraisa. Because there was a minority opinion, the Marsham was of the opinion that turning on electric lights on Shabbos is only prohibited in the Rabbanon, and there were those who thought that maybe based on that one could be makel in certain areas, whatever, could be mitzar of different things. So Rav Chaim Moshe wanted to demonstrate that he doesn't accept the view of the Marsham. So he went out of his way, bedafke, and others quote that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik did the same. He held also like that. You can recite Borei Yorei HaEish on electric bulbs, and he also went out of his way. Rav Soloveitchik didn't know that part. But he said he saw Rav Chaim Moshe. Rav Chaim Moshe was medaktik to recite Borei Yorei HaEish on an electric bulb, which was clear, where you could see the filament, to demonstrate that it's mamish eish, and one who lights such an electric bulb on Shabbos would be in violation of Edusa Deres. These are some of the general inyanim of Yontif. Not miyuchad, not specifically Pesach dik. These apply to every Yontif, but we have to keep them in mind regarding Pesach as well. Getting down a little bit to Yontif Pesach. The Iker of Pesach, of course, is Chometz. What exactly is Chometz? I remember many years ago, one of my little children was six, and we went to the doctor at this punkt on Erev Pesach in the morning, and he gave some kind of a prescription. The baby is sick, and the baby needs a prescription. So I was about to leave, so the doctor says, "Aha, I see you're a Talmud Chacham." He's not a Jewish doctor, are you there, Satan? He says, "I see you're a Talmud Chacham." What's that? How do you know a Talmud Chacham? He says, "Because the couple right before us were very pious religious people, and they gave them the prescription, so he asked them, is it Chometz? And I didn't ask, is it Chometz?" So he says, he sees I'm a Talmud Chacham, because all of his prescriptions are all Chometz. Why are you all Chometz? Because all of the prescriptions that he gives all have bacteria in them. They have live bacteria. And bacteria, that's not chometz, double go. That's chometz. He thought that chometz means bacteria. That was his definition of chometz. Yeast. No, he thought that yeast, the yeast that they sell, Fleischmann's yeast that they sell in the package, stuff that shakes, that's bacteria. So he thought that that's chometz. And he thought that all of his prescriptions are chometz. And you're allowed to take it anyway because the baby is sick. The baby is sick, so you have to take it. So they didn't want to argue with him, but the whole thing from the beginning to the end wasn't correct. Live bacteria has nothing to do with chometz. Fleischmann's yeast that they sell in this sort of packet that shakes. If you buy a bar of yeast, so how do you call it, wet yeast, so that's dough, that's chometz. But if you, that's what the Chumash speaks about tzaor, but if you have Fleischmann's yeast that gets bacteria, that's not chometz. It has nothing to do with chometz. Chometz has to be grain, either wheat or barley, or any form of wheat, or any form of barley. The Mishnah says that there are five types of grains. Basically, the Gemara explains there are two types of grains. There's wheat and barley, and forms of various forms of wheat, and various forms of barley. So any one of these grains that came in contact with water, and bacteria came and caused it to, caused the chemical reaction to occur, that's the definition of chometz. But if you have just the bacteria that itself, that's not considered chometz. That's number one, the error number one. And error number two is, just because the child is sick, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a sophist to cross nefesh. If there's no sophist to cross nefesh, then you're not permitted to have chometz on Pesach. You're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to have it in your possession. Or even if someone is sick, to the extent of a sophist, sakonis mitzvashis, if you can substitute it with a kosher Pesach medication, so you're not permitted to take chometz either. So it's important to know exactly what's chometz, what's not, and I'm sure in every community the Rabbanim and the Kashrus organizations give you a list of products and a list of the medications which are chometzdik and which are not chometzdik. It's important to know. Interesting, the halacha says that to know what the definition of matzah is, you have to know what the definition of chometz is first, because matzah is only acceptable if it's boledetim, because the pasuk describes one in conjunction with the other. Matzah has to be baked dafka from grain, such grain, wheat or barley flour, or any of the other kinds, wheat, barley, oats, rice, stuff, whatever, those types of grains that if mixed with water and allowed to sit long enough, they would have turned into chametz, except that you baked it before it had a chance to become chametz. So that's the definition of matzah. But if you make a matzah from anything that couldn't have turned into chametz, so by definition, that's not called matzah. Matzah is only in relationship to chametz. In fact, there is a din in the Talmud, in the Talmud Yerushalmi, which is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, this principle that one is not permitted to eat matzah before Pesach until you recite the bracha on Leil Pesach. Shekhar Shaman in the Sotah of Svanu Allah Kilas Matzo, you're not allowed to eat matzah. So when does this prohibition begin? Starting from last Pesach. So the commentaries on the Gemara explain, no, this prohibition only begins when it's called matzah. Matzah all year long is not called matzah. When is it called matzah? When it's in contrast to chametz. When the laws of chametz begin, then the laws of matzah begin. When do the laws of chametz begin? So that's a big dispute. So some say the laws of chametz only begin Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Erev Pesach, after Chatzos, you're not permitted to eat chametz. So that's when there's an Issa chametz, then there's a concept of chametz, then there's a din of matzah. But before Chatzos, there's no din at all. Others say no. True, the prohibition against eating chametz only begins Erev Pesach in the afternoon, or we have a chumah midrabanan a little bit from the morning, a little bit earlier, but you have to burn the chametz Erev Pesach in the morning. So there really is a shame chametz, even Erev Pesach in the morning. So the prohibition against eating matzah is all day long Erev Pesach in the daytime. And yet the other commentaries on the Gemara say, no, you have to be by the chametz the night before. The night of Erev Pesach. The night before they say that you have to be by the chametz. So since there is a Shem chametz, there is a concept of chametz with respect to the Dikas chametz, so therefore there's a concept of matzah then as well. And others, that's as far as it goes, as far as the halacha is concerned. Some say only Erev Pesach after Chatzos. Some say no from the morning of Erev Pesach, and even others go further and say, for the night before, for the night of B'dikas Chametz, since there's a Shem Chametz, so there's a Shem Matzah. You can only have a Shem Matzah when there's a Shem Chametz. Others extend this based on a minhag to 30 days before Pesach, because there is a din sometimes that you have to be B'dikas Chametz up until a month before Pesach. But since there is sometimes a concept of Chametz even a month before Pesach, starting from Purim on, so therefore there will be a concept of Matzah even a month before. Some communities have a compromise minute that they don't eat matzah from Rosh Chodesh Nissan on. That is very strange. Where does Rosh Chodesh Nissan play a role over here? If you want to say that there's a concept of chometz earlier, there's a concept of chometz, there's a concept of matzah, so it should be all the way from Purim on, from 30 days before Pesach. There's a dinner, but you got chometz in some rare occasions. And if you don't want to extend it, if you don't want to extend it to 30 days before, then it should only be that the little bit of chometz, or the day of Sreifas HaChametz. But I'll call upon him, there is such a concept that people... you're not allowed to own chametz, and then there's a mitzvah that's to be observed on Erev Pesach in the daytime, in the morning, to destroy whatever chametz you happen to have left over. The Gemara makes an interesting statement that min ha-Torah, it's not absolutely essential to burn the chametz, to destroy the chametz. Min ha-Torah, biblically speaking, the bitul b'yal masagi. If a person makes an oral declaration, he says, kol chamira v'chamira, the Aramaic, but by us the Aramaic is no good because we don't understand Aramaic. Even Yeshiva Bach and study Gemara all along, all the years, I think they would find it difficult to translate that sentence in English correctly. Kol chamir v'chamir dikir v'shusi is not such an easy sentence to translate. So it's not really sufficient to rely on the statement kol chamir v'chamir. Most people don't understand it. She really say it in English or Yiddish or whatever the Sfat HaMedina, French. The airport, they have everything in French. Whatever the Sfat HaMedina happens to be, I don't know. What exactly does that mean, that min ha-Torah, biblically speaking, when one is mevatel lechametz, when one makes an oral declaration, this is sufficient, the bitul b'yal masagi, this is sufficient. What does that mean? It's sufficient for what purpose? So there's a dispute on that Gemara, how to read Pshat in that Gemara. There are two interpretations, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says that by an oral declaration that you don't care for this chametz, as far as you're concerned, it's useless, you don't plan to use it for any purpose whatsoever, you are in fulfillment of the biblical mitzvah of Tashbisu. That the mitzvah of Tashbisu is not only observed, not only fulfilled when you actually destroy the chametz, when you burn it, or you crush it up and you destroy it and you throw it in the wind and it flies away, even if you make an oral declaration that you don't plan to use it, you're not going to gain any benefit from it, you're not going to feed it to the animals, as far as you're concerned, it's apra di alma. It's like the dust of the earth. Rashi claims that this is a biblical fulfillment of the mitzvah tashbis. Taisus disagrees with Rashi and says, how does that compare to burning tashbis? It means you utterly destroy it. How is that considered a destruction of the chametz? So Taisus disagrees with Rashi, and they say no. And when the Gemara makes the statement that when you are mevakel your chametz, that is sufficient, what it means is the following. When you are mevakel your chametz, you are declaring it as ownerless. You're not saying you don't plan to use it. What does that help? What is that? He promises to keep the laws of the Torah. What does it got to do with a mitzvah? When a boy becomes a mitzvah, he promises to keep all the laws of the Torah. When a ger, when an non-Jew comes to convert, he has to promise to keep all the mitzvah. What is that? An Erev Pesach, he has to promise that he's going to keep the laws of Pesach. And an Erev Shavuos, he has to promise he's going to keep the laws of Shavuos. And an Erev Shabbos, he has to promise he's going to keep the laws of Shabbos. What kind of a pshat is this that Rashi says? An Erev Pesach, every Jew should promise to keep the laws of Chametz. How is that a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisu? He says, now the mitzvah of Tashbisu of destroying Chametz is only fulfilled if you actually utterly destroy the Chametz. You burn it or you destroy it in some other fashion, form of fashion. But if a person makes a declaration that he declares his Chametz as ownerless, he's mafkir his Chametz. So then it no longer belongs to him. No, if it's not his Chametz, so he's not in violation of Bal Yeroi, Bal Matzah. Because the Pasuk in Chumash only says, if it belongs to you, lechach. But if it doesn't belong to you, then you're not in violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Matzah. So the nusach that we use when we say in Aramaic, the difficult Aramaic called Chamira, Chamira, Dike B'Shusi, and most people don't understand and they should say in English, we use a nusach, we make a statement that covers, that satisfies both Rashi's opinion and Tosfos' opinion, because we make a declaration, Lehevi Hefker. We say we declare it as ownerless. We don't want to be the owners of this chametz. Once we declare it as ownerless, that's not ours, and we're not in violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Matzah. And we also make a declaration to satisfy Rashi's opinion. We say, Libotel ka'afra diara. We declare that it's meaningless, useless. We don't plan to use it. We're not going to feed it to the young. As far as we're concerned, it's like the dust of the earth. So we satisfy, in our oral declaration, Kol Hamira, we satisfy both the opinion of Rashi and the opinion of Tosfos. The trouble is, however, that the text is also not so well worded in most of the machzorim. If the person first is mafkir his chametz and it doesn't belong to him, so this satisfies Tosfos' opinion. It's not his and it has no problems, no headaches, no problem. But according to Rashi, true, he won't have any problem or violation of Bal Yeroi Bal Matzah if the chametz is not his, but he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of Tashbisu. But if he would declare that he doesn't plan to use the chametz, as far as he's concerned, it's useless, worthless, it's like the dust of the earth, according to Rashi, that's the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Now, if you're first going to be mafki your chametz, then it's not yours. So I can't be mavakal your chametz. I don't have a mitzvah of declaring the chametz as useless and meaningless if it doesn't belong to me. So what you should really do is just the reverse. First, you should satisfy Rashi's opinion. First, you should say any chametz of any kind of any brand of chametz that I happen to have, chamira, the chamira, two different types of chametz, chametz or any chametz that I have, libatel ka'afra diyara, I declare it as useless, meaningless. I don't plan to use it, and I don't care about it at all. It's like the dust of the earth. And then you should say, in conclusion, the lehevi hefker, and I declare it also as ownerless, because you should first satisfy Rashi's opinion, and Rashi claims that this is the fulfillment of the mitzvah tashbisu. By declaring that you don't plan to use it. According to Tosfos, you haven't accomplished anything. So the second step should be that you declare that it's hefker. But if you're going to first declare it as hefker and satisfy Tosfos' opinion, so that's not a kima mitzvah. Even Tosfos says that's not a kima mitzvah. So once you've done that, then you cannot later on add on a statement to satisfy Rashi Shita. If it's not your chametz, there's nothing to discuss. So you've just avoided the mitzvah. You haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. You should really word the text a little different. You should say, kol chamir, any chametz that I have, I declare as meaningless, ownerless, libatel ka'afra diyara, I'm a batel l'chametz, like the dust of the earth. And then you conclude by adding on, the levi hefker, and I also declare that it should be ownerless, it shouldn't belong to me. Again, the Gemara says, the Talmud states that this is min ha-Torah. Biblically, when a person declares that he is mevatel his chametz, this is sufficient. But midrabbanan, the rabbis were afraid that the person may not make this declaration, b'lev shalem. He declares that he doesn't care what happens to his chametz. What if he has $100 full of schnapps? What if he doesn't clear? And if a goy is going to come in to drink his schnapps, he's going to let him. Not exactly. So he's not really deem a batel chametz. Or he declares that it's hefker. According to Tosfos, he declares hefker. So if his next door neighbor, my shikir, next door neighbor, the guy is going to come in, I'm going to let him drink the schnapps. So if I really meant what I said, I let him take the schnapps, walk off with the schnapps, I don't care. But the chachamim were afraid that if you're going to leave it up to everybody just to be mevatel chametz, half of the people, perhaps more than half of the people, won't really mean their oral declaration. So the chachamim insisted that you shouldn't rely on the din min hator, you shouldn't rely on bitul chametz. You should get rid of the chametz. So how do you get rid of the chametz? So the practice always was for centuries, you burn it. You give it away, you burn it, goodbye. In recent years, the practice developed that instead of burning the chametz, you sell the chametz to the goy. What kind of business is this to sell the chametz to the goy? So you leave it in your house, but technically speaking, since it doesn't belong to you, it belongs to the non-Jews, so you're not in violation of Bayur Abayimot. This is a legal fiction. This is what the halacha calls haram. It's legal. It's not illegal. It's legal, but it's a legal fiction. You're not violating the letter of the law, but you're certainly violating the spirit of the law. The Torah doesn't want us to have chametz in the house. So we go and we sell the chametz to the goy, but the chametz, I used to sell the schnapps to my next door neighbor. He drank it up that night. And he didn't think that that was part of my religious ceremony, that he had to drink it up, that I should be there. He drank the chametz, so that's gewaldic, that's not a haramit, that's not a legal fiction. He drank the chametz and you can tell. But if I leave the chametz in my house and I sell it to the goy, the chametz is there, but I don't violate by Rabbi Matz because I sold it to the goy. That's called a haramit, that's called a legal fiction. Does the halacha, we recognize it, it's legal, it's not illegal, it's legal. Is that permissible? Are you allowed to do legal fiction in mitzvah satar? Let's say when it comes to Shemitah year. So the law says that you're not allowed to work the land in Eretz Yisrael. So is it permissible? Is it recommended? Do we say that Lamahadrim and Alhadrim to sell the whole Medina Yisrael to the Arabs? And since it belongs to the Arabs, so there are some, not everybody agrees, there are some who are of the opinion that if it belongs to a goy, so the laws of Shemitah, which today are only with the Rabbanan, when Mashiach comes, it will be deraisa, so that has to won't work. But Kozman, that Shemitah is only with the Rabbanan, so there are opinions who hold, not everyone agrees, that if it belongs to a goy, there's no dinah Shemitah. So you're allowed to do that. So many Poskim were opposed to this because, are you talking? Haramah, you have the opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah, but there you're not holding by selling your form to a goy. You're going to sell to a goy in order to avoid the mitzvah of Shemitah. You're not allowed to do that. Let's say there's only one lulav and esrog in the whole community. Before Sukkot, you sell the lulav and the esrog to a goy and he takes it to a different community. So you're allowed to do that? So you're left without a lulav and an esrog. So you're left without a mitzvah. If you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, so how do you go sell the whole land to an Arab and you're left without a mitzvah? You're not supposed to do that. So what do you do here by Pesach? Exact same thing. So how is it that for the last few centuries, the recent development, in the days of Gemara, they didn't have this. These are the Gemara they had in rare instances when a person had a liquor shop, when a person had a chometz, he had tons of chometz, and he doesn't have the opportunity to sell it, so then Tosefta says, b'shas hafkak, like that, so you sell it to the goy, and you buy it back after Pesach. But they didn't have wholesale mechiras chometz like we have today. This is a recent development in the last few centuries. So the question is, isn't this haramah, which usually we don't permit? So the Paskin point to what Tosefta in the beginning of Chorus, and the Gimel, where Taisus draws a distinction between haramah with respect to mitzvahs as opposed to haramah with respect to averis. Let's say, for example, you're not permitted to have fleishik with milchis together. We know that. What if you have, you just had a fleishik meal, you want to have a cup of coffee at the end with parva milk? Parva milk is a parva. You're not having fleishik and milchik, but you're in violation of the, would you say you're in violation of the spirit of the law, but you're not in violation of the letter of the law? No, what kind of, there's no spirit of the law, there's no letter of the law. When it comes to an avera, let's say the Torah says you're not allowed to shave with a razor. So I didn't shave with a razor, I have an electric shaver. So on the assumption, that's a question, on the assumption that that's mutter, that everybody agrees that it's mutter, because those are all mutter. Still, you're in violation of the spirit of the law. True, you're not in violation of the letter of the law, because you didn't shave with a razor, but you don't have a beard. So well, that's not in violation of the spirit of the law, not in violation of the letter of the law. What does it got to do? So when do you call it haram or when not? So the person point out, based on the taste in the beginning of Chorus, when it comes to an Averi, you're not allowed to shave with a razor. So whatever is prohibited, is prohibited. Whatever is mutter, is mutter. What do you mean you're a violation of nothing? If it's mutter, it's mutter. If you have parva milk, there's nothing wrong, it's mutter. When it comes to a mitzvah, Shemitah, you're not allowed to work the land during Shnas HaShemitah, that's an Averi. But it's also a mitzvah. V'shach sahor et shabbos l'Hashem. Whoever has a farm in Eretz Yisrael has a mitzvah to let his field rest during the sabbatical year, during the seventh year. So if he sells his farm to a goy, and the farm was normally not for sale, he wasn't really interested in selling. He only sold it in order to avoid fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that's a violation. That's how Roma, that's not proper to do. To sell your opportunity to do a mitzvah and you're left without the mitzvah. That's like selling the lulav and the esrog to someone in another community. So the whole community is left without a lulav and an esrog. So you've done an act of harameh and you've sold away the mitzvah. But by Pesach, what's the story? On Erev Pesach in the morning, there's a mitzvah of tashbisa. There's a mitzvah to burn whatever chametz you have left. And then there's a lav, there's an isur about your bayimotzi. You're not allowed to have chametz in your possession and your ownership on Pesach, on Yom. When it comes to Erev Pesach, those who practice Mechiras Chametz, 99% of the Jews have their rabbi sell a chametz to them. So the rabbi sells all of the chametz in the house, and the balabatim don't burn any chametz. No, they leave over a couple of pieces of bread, they leave over a couple of bagels or whatever, and then they put it out when they bite the chametz and they put it together. Then when it comes to Erev Pesach, they want to burn that chametz. So they are in fulfillment of the mitzvah of tashbisa. What is a bigger, fatter mitzvah if you burn a ton of chametz as opposed to burning an ounce of chametz? No. The mitzvah is to burn whatever amount of chametz you happen to have left over. Some the Minchas Sinner suggests an idea, you should go to the store. If you don't have any chametz now, you should go to the store to buy some chametz in that case, if not, have some chametz to burn. His opinion was that his suggestion has not been accepted. We don't assume that it's a mitzvah to go buy chametz. Whatever chametz you happen to have around the house, it's a mitzvah to get rid of it. Dispose of the last bit of chametz. So if I had a ton of chametz and I sold 99% of the chametz to the goy and I left over 1%, I left over a few ounces of chametz, and that those few ounces of chametz that I have, I burn on Erev Pesach. So I'm in fulfillment of the complete fulfillment of the mitzvah of tashbisa. I did a harameh in order not to violate Balyura by Matta. I have all a ton of chametz. I have 99% of my chametz is sitting in my house, locked up in the cabinet. So I sold it to the goy before Pesach comes. So I won't be in violation of Bayur Abayimot. But I didn't utilize the Mechiras Chametz to pata myself from the mitzvah of Tashbisu. No, I fulfilled Tashbisu. I left over the Chametz that I'm not selling to the goy, and I fulfilled Tashbisu on that Chametz. So that's why when it comes to Mechiras Chametz, we're not worried about the problem of Ha'aroma. It is a legal fiction. But we're employing this legal fiction in order to avoid violation of an Avera by Yeroyah. We're not using the legal fiction in order to relieve ourselves of fulfillment of the mitzvah of Tashbisa. Tashbisa was fulfilling anyway. But people have to be careful. The rabbis usually on Erev Pesach in the morning, the rabbis wait to sell a chametz to the last possible time, because there's always going to be some balabatim going to call up the last minute. The rabbi's going to have to get the mail in the morning. Sometimes balabatim will send a letter in the mail, and then there's always going to be somebody going to call up the last minute. Rabbis, it's too late to sell a chametz. He forgot to contact the rabbis. So the rabbis have to wait till the last minute. They can't sell a chametz at 6 o'clock in the morning. They have to wait till the last minute, about 10:30 in the morning. So if the balabatim have to run to work, the balabatim daven at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they want to burn their chametz at 6:45 and go to the office and Erev Pesach in the morning, they can't. If they're going to burn their chametz, their little bag full of 10 crumbs, they're going to burn their chametz at 6:45 in the morning, that's not a mitzvah of tashbisu. The Balabas still owns a ton of chametz. It says in Shulchan Aruch, you can burn the chametz anytime you want on Erev Pesach. Early, up until 10:30, you can burn any time in the morning. Yeah, this is good. This is before the practice of Mechiras Chametz was instituted. So you're going to burn all of the chametz that you have left over. But if the fella has a ton of liquor and all kinds of things he has in his cabinet, and that chametz he's not going to destroy. He's just going to destroy 6:45. He's not going to destroy a little bag full of chametz. And what's with the rest of the chametz? So far he hasn't destroyed all the chametz that he has. The rest of the chametz the rabbi is going to sell at 10:30. Selling chametz, that's not a kiyum mitzvah of tashbisu. And the chametz that he burned at 6:45, that's not a kiyum mitzvah either. The mitzvah of tashbisu is to burn the last amount of chametz that you have. So then you're faced with a problem. Those who rely on the rabbi for the purpose of mechiras chametz should really wait to burn the chametz till after they know for sure that the rabbi has sold the chametz. And they know that the 99% of the chametz is no longer there. And they just have left over this bag of chametz. But then they go and they burn the last bit of chametz that they have. That's a good, in that situation, there's no act of haram. But if they first burn a little bit of chametz and they haven't destroyed the last bit of chametz after, that's not a mitzvah yet. And then the rabbi tells the chametz, so that's vital on a mitzvah. So what did they say, brocha b'dikas chametz last night? The brocha that you say, asher k'dishana b'mitzot v'tzivonu, al-biyah chametz, the brocha is really a brocha that relates to the destroying of the chametz the next day. So the b'dikas chametz is the beginning of the mitzvah, and the burning of the chametz the next day, in our case in the morning, is the gemara of the mitzvah. But if they don't burn the last bit of chametz that they have, then they haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. And that's what people have to be careful about. A lot of people misunderstand the function of the rabbi, the role of the rabbi in the mechiras chametz. Some people think they're selling their chametz to the rabbi. And the rabbi has all of this chametz. It's his headache now. And then the rabbi sells it to the guy. This is not the common practice. You could do that if you want to, but that's not the common practice. The practice is that we appoint the rabbi as a shliach on our behalf to sell a chametz for us. So we sign a shtar harshoah. Harshoah means, it says in big letters, but it says it in Hebrew. So most people don't understand what it says there. A shtar harshoah means that we are appointing the rabbi as a shaliach, as our representative, as our agent, to act on our behalf to sell the chametz to the goy. Why do you have to have a rabbi? What's so complicated about material chametz? Why can't a layman sell the chametz himself? The answer is, if you take your box of chametz and you give it to the goy, and you say, here's your chametz, and give me $10, that wouldn't be a problem. If he gave you the money into his house, and fights it, and you can drink all the schnapps, and there wouldn't be any problem. The problem is that we leave the chametz in our apartment, and we want to sell it to the goy, so exactly which kinyan are we supposed to make? What form of transference of ownership should be done to accomplish that the chametz now belongs to the non-Jew? So this is a big tilfel in the Shulchan Aruch. It's very unclear. And the practice is that the rabbis make 6 kinyanim. In order to make sure that the chametz has really transferred ownership, that it really belongs to the goy, so they make a kinyan kesef, and that's questionable. They make a kinyan halipin, they make a kinyan agav, and they make a kinyan kipimini gamdina, and they make the kitzah, they make 6 kinyanim to make sure that the chametz really belongs to the goy. So the layman may not know how to make all these 6 kinyanim. Not all the rabbis know how to make all the 6 kinyanim. This is complicated. So that's why in New York, I don't know, maybe Toronto is on a higher madrega. I know in New York, not all of the rabbis know how to do mechiras chametz. Usually they all get together. A group of rabbis, 5-10 rabbis get together, and they make sure that they have someone who really knows Shulchan Aruch to know step by step how to do the mechiras chametz. But for a layman to do it on his own would not be recommended, because it's tricky, it's not so poshut how you sell chametz to the goy, if it's even in your rishus, and just telling the goy that he now should have ownership of the chametz. So that's the practice. So we all appoint the rabbi as the shaliach on our behalf. He represents us in selling everybody's chametz to the goy, to the non-Jew. That's why some poskim point out, I cannot appoint a person, a shaliach, to do something for me, which I myself am unable to do. So let's say, zrizim makdimim limitzis. I get the shul bulletin today in the mail, and it says that we're selling the chametz. Tomorrow morning I come to the rabbi, right after the minyan, I fill out my sheet. I appoint the rabbi as a shliach to sell my chametz. I can only appoint the rabbi as a shliach to sell a chametz that I already possess now. Until Pesach, I'm going to buy more cookies. I'm going to buy more spaghetti. I'm going to buy more devil gourd. Someone wants to ask the rabbi about. Someone asked the rabbi about devil dogs. He said, What dog? What devil dogs? I'm leaving devil dogs in the freezer. One of the Talmidim this year, I remember. So, the chametz that I have now, which I myself can sell to the goy if I want to, I have the ability to appoint a rabbi as a shliach. But the chametz that I didn't even buy yet, that's what we call in halacha, a davish lo bo l'yolam. I cannot sell a chametz that I plan to buy tomorrow. I cannot sell the Brooklyn Bridge. Even if ultimately I'll buy the Brooklyn Bridge, but as long as it doesn't belong to me today, so I cannot sell it to you. Likishay yishali. It should belong to you. If and when I ever acquire ownership, it should belong to you. So just like I cannot sell whatever I don't own yet, I cannot appoint a shliach to do that on my behalf. So the person pointed out, it's a big problem. Those people who appoint a rabbi as their shliach well in advance of Erev Pesach, aren't they going to buy more chametz before Pesach comes? So if they're going to leave some of that chametz over, you have a big problem. How can the rabbi serve as a shliach on behalf of those people with respect to that chametz that he didn't even have at the time that he appointed a shliach? It's a big problem. So that's why many like to wait till the last minute, just to make the rabbis crazy. And they're faced off, 500 balabas are going to come to the rabbi in the morning, make him a sugar. So you have to be careful. You have to come a little, have rachmanis on your local rabbi, come in advance, well enough in advance, to give the rabbi a chance to keep chesmen of all the 500 balabatim. But you should come late enough after you think that you're not planning to buy any additional chametz. Because regarding the chametz that you're going to buy afterwards, you can't really appoint the rabbi as a shliach. Those who plan to travel to Eretz Yisrael for Yontif, or those who are in Eretz Yisrael plan to come to America for Yontif, there was a big dispute 150 years ago, a big dispute among the Poskim, when they sell their chametz, which man counts? Does it depend where your chametz is, or does it depend where you are? Because in Eretz Yisrael, Pesach comes 7 hours different. What is it? Pesach comes 7 hours earlier. And Pesach is over 7 hours earlier. So the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael are selling the chametz earlier, but they're buying it back. They're buying it back a day earlier. They're not waiting for the second day Yontif. They're buying it back after the end of the first day Yontif. So the question is, if I am in Eretz Yisrael and my chametz is in America, or I am in America and my chametz is in Eretz Yisrael, what would this din of Bayura Bayimata? Does it depend on where the chametz is, or does it depend on where the owner of the chametz is? So this was a big dispute. So that's why it's generally accepted that those who are traveling for a different time zone, if you're going to Florida, it's the same time zone. The difference of a few minutes does make such a difference. You're going to sell a chametz whether in Florida or in Montreal or in Toronto, and it's all at the same time anyway. But if you're going to a different time zone, there's going to be a major difference in an hour or more. So then the practice is that you have to tell your rabbi in advance, I'm going to be out of town for Yontif. Make sure that you make me a mechiras chametz that you start before the earliest month, and you should buy it back after the latest month. To go lechumre in both directions. Speaking of those who travel to Eretz Yisrael, there's another problem. There is a din of tchum. There is a din of Tchum Shabbos and Tchum Yontif, that one is not permitted to go Chutz L'Tchum. Chutz L'Tchum means 18 minutes. A Tchum is a distance that it takes Alpayim Amor. That's the distance that it takes you generally to walk in 18 minutes. So the whole city, if you have an Erev, there's no problem. The whole area that's included in the Erev is considered your Mokom, and then you can walk another 18 minutes outside of the city limits. Let's say you don't have an area, so then you have to figure out exactly where the city ends up. It doesn't depend on what the Canadian government has said. It doesn't depend on what the American government has to say. There are rules and regulations in Mishnayot and Eridan and Dinim Shulchan Aruch how you determine the city limits, and then at the end of the city limits, then you have the right to walk 18 minutes. Fine. So usually people don't get involved in the problem of walking. So you have an area, you don't go so far away anyway. You don't go on such big hikes on Shabbos and Yom. The problem is, there is another din of Tchum. Not only am I not permitted to go Chutz L'Tchum, my property may not go Chutz L'Tchum. It wasn't my property. Let's say I own a sefer. I own a sefer. So the beginning of Yontif, on Shabbos you can't carry anywhere, the beginning of Yontif, wherever I am, I'm kovea, where my makom is, and my Tchum is in that area. So not only am I not permitted to go Chutz L'Tchum, my sefer, my talus, my property, whatever, my food, my cake, my cookies, whatever, my children, may not go Chutz L'Tchum. And let's say someone will come on Yontif who has a different Tchum. He comes from out of town. He's allowed to come into my area. I'm going to give him a gift, a sefer, or a food, or a talus, or something. He's going to want to take it on Yontif. He's allowed to carry. He'll take it to where he lives. He'll walk Tchum L'Tchum of where he is, but it's going to be Chutz L'Tchum of where my Tchum is. So the Mishnah says that this is forbidden. He's not permitted to take my property, Chutz L'Tchumi. So we don't usually get involved in this anyway. But the way we do get involved is the following. Let's say a couple goes to Eretz Yisrael for Yontif, and they leave over in their home. They leave over all of their store and everything. They don't take everything, every single thing with them. So the din is that all of their property is now Chutz L'Tchumi. So they're all the way in Eretz Yisrael. So that's certainly Chutz L'Tchumi. All of their property that they left behind here in America is Chutz L'Tchumi. So the din is, if my property at the beginning of Yontif is Chutz L'Tchum, no one is permitted to move it Chutz L'Dalad HaMoisah. If the, let's say, the couple went to Eretz Yisrael before Yontif, before Pesach, and the children stay home, so the children can use everything they want in the house. They can move around the furniture, they can move around the Sfarim and the Talesim and everything, because within the same building, it's considered Terech Dalad HaMoisah, even if it's more than Dalad HaMoisah. If you have an Erev in the whole community, inside the Erev is considered Terech Dalad HaMoisah. But if you don't have an Erev, so then you can't carry a matzah to shul. You can't carry a talis to shul, because the minute you take it out into the street, you're taking it Chutz L'Dalad HaMoisah, and the thing was Chutz L'Tchum to begin with. Because if the owners of the property are in Eretz Yisrael, Unless they say explicitly before they go, we are lending the children who are here, we're lending you all of the things that are in the house. But if they don't say explicitly, it's just assumed that the parents are not makpid if you use their property. If it's just assumed that it's not good enough. You have to find out the details of this din. This comes up every so often. Just a word or two about Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze. People have chomets, so they have to dispose of their chomets. Either they destroy it or they sell it to a goy. What if one has shares in a corporation? So this is a big question that was dealt with in Europe, and it has really never been resolved. The din is, in order to violate Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze, you have to be the owner of the chomets. Just because there's someone else over there in Bybrick owns, but there's a Jew somewhere owns chomets, so it's not my right. It's my right to try to educate him. But you shouldn't violate Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze, but I'm not in violation of Bal Yiro because someone else has chomets. The chomets has to belong to me. So there were some who are of the opinion that one, people who have shares in a corporation, it's like investing money in a bank. I invest money in a corporation. You don't consider it as if I own a chelek, I am a shutif in the business, and every little bit of chomets that they have, I'm a part owner, and part of the chomets is mine, and I'm a violation by a rabbi. So many persons know that that's not the case. The pshat is that it's like an investment, and you earn revach on it. The chalal, there's nothing to discuss. Others said no, that strictly speaking, when you buy shares in a corporation, you become a shutif in everything, so therefore it is shalom, but still there may yet be that there's no Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze, because the Ramban in his commentary on Chumash on Parashas Bo says that in order to violate Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze, it's not sufficient that the chometz is shali, the chometz belongs to me, it has to be shali u'birshusi. This is a concept that appears in the Gemara, those who remember Baba Messiah and Baba Kama. Shali means that it's mine, and birshusi means that I have access to it. The many gedolim in Europe are of the opinion that true people who have shares in a corporation is considered as if they own part of everything that the corporation has. If the corporation has schnapps or whatever, let's say if you have mutual shares, mutual funds, so they buy shares in everything. So everyone has shares in some chametz company or another. The many gedolim are of the opinion it's not called shaloi, and others held no, that it is shaloi, but it's not bishusoi. You have no access to it. You can't just walk in and say, I want the chametz, I want this. You can't buy a box to them. There's a system the way they run their company. So true, it's shalacha, but it's not bishusoi. So there's no violation of Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze. Nonetheless, even though one could argue the point and say it's not shalom, you can say that it's not bishusoi, still the proper thing is that you should mention to your local rabbi that when you want to sell your chametz, you want to sell your shares that you have in chametzika companies as well, because many poskim hold that the both kulis are not valid. It is shalom and it is bishuso, and there is a question about your Bal Yiro. With respect to chametz over all of our pesach, that's a different story. There is a dispute in the Gemara. What is the nature of the prohibition of chametz? So there's one opinion among the Tanoim. Rav Yehuda's opinion is that any chametz that's in existence on pesach, any beer, any cake, cookies, spaghetti, noodles, whatever, any kind of chametz that's in existence on Pesach becomes also b'achila b'hanor l'yonim v'ed, period. And even if it belongs to a non-Jew, it doesn't matter. Any chametz that exists on Pesach, you're not allowed to eat. That opinion was not accepted. We passed on a Rav Shimon that the chametz may not be eaten on Pesach, but as soon as Pesach is over, you're permitted to eat the chametz. But if a Jew was in possession of chametz on Pesach in violation of the din of the Torah, where you roll up chametz, that you're not allowed to have any chametz in your possession. So then the rabbis introduced as a penalty, a knas, that there's a prohibition, it's forbidden to eat the chametz over all of our pesach, as a penalty for the person who violated the din of Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze. So since we passed that the chametz over all of our pesach is not an isa deraisa, it's only a knas for the rabban because of the fact that somebody violated Bal Yiro Bal Yimotze. But that's why many poskim amekel, they say, what if you have a corporation where there is certainly going to be a Jew who owns some shares there? If the Jew owns a big chunk of the company, let's say you have a liquor company where 40% of the shares are owned by a Jew who's not interested in selling the chametz, then you have a problem. You assume that the schnapps is real chametz, so it should be chametz shalom al pesach, unless you know that they're selling the chametz. But if you only know that there are always Jews who own shares in all the corporations. But just because a Jew has a slight share, the many poskim say, no, there was no Bal Yiro because it was Zayin Shaloi, and others said, no, it was Zayin Bishusai. And there were other tzadim lohakas, even though lechatchila, the proper thing is, for people who are Shomer and Mitzvahs, they should see to it that they sell their chomets, including the shares and corporations, but to say to the Yeved that all of that chomets will be off the rest of Pesach, this is a question and then he would be mekel on this. The laws of Pesach are many and complicated. That's why the Gemara says that you have to start learning the Hilchos Pesach Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag. You have to learn on Purim. You have to start learning Hilchos Pesach on Purim, and not just to learn on Purim and then on Erev Yom. You have to learn Keteda every day, the 30 days before. We just gave some of the highlights of the Yoni Pesach. The Chachamim tell us in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that the Nisan Nigalu, it was in the month of Nisan that the Jewish nation was redeemed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the time of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the Gula Hasidah will also occur in Nisan Hasidim Lehigol. Hasid Lover, the Rabban Shalom, will bring us the Gula Hasidah in the month of Nisan. And the Gemara has a fascinating comment. The Gemara says in the middle of a discussion of one of the Tafanis of Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, that when do we visualize the Beis HaMikdash being built? So the Gemara has a strange comment. It's going to be built on Pesach. Built on Pesach. The Gemara says at one point, on the first day Pesach. So Rashi says, on Yontif. We're not permitted to build the Beis HaMikdash on Yontif. We just read last week in the beginning of Parshas Vayakel. On Shabbos, we read the first comment in Rashi that is important as it is to build the Beis HaMikdash. This is the whole tachlis of the creation of Shemayim Ba'aretz. But it's great and wonderful and important that the whole purpose of the creation of the world to have a Beis HaMikdash, but it's not Decha Shabbos and it's not Decha Yontif. So how can the Gemara make such a strange statement that we can envision the possibility of the Beis HaMikdash being built on Yontif, on the first day Yontif Pesach? So Rashi and Pesach quote the Medrash that Mikdash Hashem Kodem Liyodecho, on the Pasuk in Oz Yashid that we recite every day in the davening in the Pesuk of the Zimmer, that the first and the second Beis HaMikdash had to be built by human beings. And the third Beis HaMikdash, which will be the everlasting one, will come down in Hashemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be the one to build this Beis HaMikdash. If the Baruch Shalom is building the Beis HaMikdash, if he'll do it, so we won't be involved in any problems of Yom Tov, so it can even come down on Yom Tov. That's where the Gemara makes such a strange comment. The Ibni Yemas, when do you visualize the Beis HaMikdash being built? The Gemara says, Pesach, on Yom Tov Pesach. Let us hope and pray to the Rabbanu Shalom that he should bring the Gula Hasidah before tomorrow, and it's not tomorrow, let's hope in the month of Nisan, and let's hope we should celebrate the all Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Hey, Rabbi Shachter has consented to take a few questions.
Is one permitted to go away to a hotel knowing in advance that he won't be able to fulfill a mitzvah of Hadlokas Neris for the second night of Yom Tov? That's the question. Because you're doing a Harama, you're setting up a situation, well, now you know that it's impossible to fulfill a certain mitzvah. I don't know if that's called Harama to be Mevatel a mitzvah. The whole mitzvah to light Neris only applies if it's dark in the house and you need light, and there's a mitzvah that you should bench lift on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yom Tov, on the second day of whatever. But if you live in a house where it's light, I don't know if there is any mitzvah. It's not the same as the person who's going away to a community where there is no lulav and esrei. No, even over there, he is obligated in the mitzvah, but he knows he won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah. But here, there's no obligation at all. Because that's a simple thing to do. That's an easy solution. But if there's any slight difficulty and the room is lit up, I don't think there's even a mitzvah at all. There's no mitzvah. I didn't mention about Cheder Hashena. Be in the cheder achila or in some other room where you're going to use it. Right. On Yom Kippur, there's a special inyan to light neiris in the room where you sleep. But all year long, on Shabbos and Yom Kippur, it has nothing to do with the bedroom. Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. So, except for mentioning in the hotel, in the room where you're staying.
Yeah.
But in any event, Shabbos also mentioned about the requirement of being mostly poor. And is it possible that by lighting the neiris in a particular location, wherever it is in the room, even if it is a room that's flooded with light, that there is some hosafa of ore in that that to read in that area and therefore derive the hanah from the neighbor.
Then he recited bracha over such canon. That's questionable. Very questionable. That's why many would recommend that you avoid the whole problem, light the candle in a different room where it's dark, rather than relying on the fact that there's a slight addition of light. Because in the Shulchan Aruch, this notion of having a slight hosafa of light is only mentioned in a situation where one balabasta lit at one end of the table, the other one lights at the other end, and there is no light on top. So there actually is a significant amount of tosefes lehor v'simcha. By us, it's very slight, so it's difficult to determine how much tosefes lehor you need. If the timer does it, we assume that that's not a problem, but we cannot recite a bracha over the lights that go on automatically by the timer. One only can recite a bracha when he actually does the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah is taking place by itself, and there's no, I'm not doing a ma'aseh mitzvah, I cannot say a bracha on it.
I'd like to ask Rabbi Goffin to thank our speaker and to make a few announcements in conclusion.
As the Gemara says, in Beis Medrash below Chiddush, tonight we certainly have sat in a very large Beis Medrash, have been mekayim the mitzvah called Dichvin Yesev Yechol in a Torah sense. We have learned a great deal about things, many things, that we accepted as mitzvahs hanoshim milumada, as things that we just do almost happenstance, and have truly illuminated in the Torah sense our understanding of the beauty and the complexity of our halacha. For this we thank Rav Schechter, who in such an easy way, in such a drachei darchei noam way, was able to make this evening all that more enjoyable and understandable. I am also pleased to say that once is not enough, that next week in Mitzvah Shem, Rav Schechter will speak about the Leil HaSeder, and he asks each of us to bring our Haggadahs with us as a text, and we will be here again next week in Mitzvah Shem at this very same time for another of Shloshim Yom Kodem HaPesach, as we get closer into the Chodesh itself to be mekayim that mitzvah. I just want to make a couple of final announcements, one on the sorrowful side, that a member of both B'nai Torah as well as the BAYT synagogue, Mr. Mendel Kaufman, was nifter today. And the Levaya will be tomorrow morning at 9:30 from Steeles College, 9:30 tomorrow morning. Shiva will be at Promenade 17420 Bathurst Street, apartment 510. Of course, next week's shiur we mentioned about. Tapes are available of this shiur, will be available to the public. If you'll just come up front, sign your name, your address, and phone number, we'll be more than happy to send it out to you. In the back, there are a number of items that you might want to look at on your way out. One of them being the special sponsoring of a Haggadah. When we were in Eretz Yisrael on our trip in December, the notion of a Haggadah written from a point of view of a religious Zionist for Russians, in Hebrew on one side and in Russian on the other, the concept was finalized, the Haggadah has been printed. It is to meet the needs of all the new Olim, equating Yitziat Mitzrayim with their Yitziah, to make it relevant to them. It has articles from many Gedolim, including Rav Soloveitchik Shlita, on Pesach for them in Russian. A And what we ask, what B'nai Akiva asks specifically, is that you join in this miracle of freedom by sponsoring as many Haggadahs as you possibly can in the back. Tonight, your name and your message to a Russian family will go inside a Haggadah that will be presented to them in Eretz Yisrael before Yontif, and they will know that it came from you. So you may participate in this mitzvah, Vigarata Levincha, more than just to yourself, those who don't even know. And lastly, there are also tzedakah boxes in the back that are totally for the usage of tzedakah, which will go to Yeshivot Hesder. They, of course, along with all others in Eretz Yisrael, have been hit by the cutback in government funds, and therefore your tzedakah that you give before Hadlakas Neros, or tzedakah that you give when you have spare change, certainly will go and help. And we would ask that you sign up for those as well. When you take one, we'd like to have your name and your phone number so that we can follow the tzedakah to make sure that it gets to its proper conclusion. Mariv will be downstairs in the Beis Medrash immediately following. Thank you very much.
You're saying that when they go to hotels, even the first night,
when do you make your bittel?
What good is your bittel in the morning?
You're supposed to make it before the rabbi's time.
You're supposed to make
your bittel on the day before the rabbi's time.
Okay.
Otherwise, you can't do it before, because then he's not selling. You've already made your chametz hefker, so what's he selling?
What do you mean,
the rabbi has sold
it. There's a big discussion when you're mevatel your chametz, are you being mevatel your chametz that you're selling to the goy also? So what kind of a bittel is that? So the pashto says you're not being mevatel your chametz, you're just being mevatel your chametz that you don't sell.
Chametz that you forgot about.
In
case you didn't burn it and you didn't sell it.
You burned it, the rabbi shows it's supposed to be mevatel.
No, the promise that you plan to sell, the rabbi is going to take
the rabbi
money.
Rabbi sold. I'm talking about in the morning.
Yeah.
The rabbi sold your chametz.
Okay.
Now you burn it. So okay. Nothing left.
In the event that you have some chametz left that you don't know where it is, that's the main question.
The chazite.
Whatever I saw and I slipped up, I forgot to burn it.
In case the rabbi's sale was a haramah.